Hello, and thanks so much for joining me for another edition of Face the Facts. I'm your host, April Moss. Today, we're going to be getting into the nitty-gritty of what's happened in regards to the government planning, orchestrating this entire narrative that we've lived through for the last 3 years. I'm going to be speaking with an expert, a former pharmaceutical executive who has been sharing recently her studies and what her FOIA requests have revealed. We're going to get into all of it today, and I'm delighted to introduce you to my guest, Sasha Latipova. Sasha, it's an honor to have you on the show today.
Hi, April. Thank you for inviting me.
So tell everybody, for those who are not familiar of who you are, how long you worked in pharma and just exactly why you decided to start pursuing this career of, you know, people need to have transparency about what's happening.
Yeah. Well, I worked in pharma for all my career, pretty much, over 20 years, close to 25 years, and in various roles in analytics and in the beginning, and then more in on the R&D side. And ultimately, I ran several of my own companies, contract research organizations. So these are the companies that are doing performing clinical trials for pharmaceutical sponsors. We call them, you know, sponsors of the drugs. And I worked for a variety of over 60 pharma companies, large and small, all over the world, doing clinical trials. And my most recent company was focused all on safety assessments, cardiovascular safety assessments, because they're extremely important. And it was one of the largest sort of items of research and development is to exclude risks, especially to cardiovascular system. And, you know, so I, yeah, that's where I spent all my time. And then I sold my companies and I retired and I thought I'd never have anything to do with pharma. I was very happy.
Right.
So, but you know, this whole, when this whole COVID started, then I couldn't sit idly and watch all what they were pulling over people and how much dishonesty and lies right away. And, you know, so I became very concerned and I started speaking. And, you know, I'm a nobody on social media. I never had any large presence in social media. They immediately banned me everywhere because I'm from pharma and I'm saying things, you know, and then, you know, from there. But I, you know, I continued speaking. I was on like small channels and talking to people and did various research groups, scientists, doctors. I made hundreds of contacts in this space now. You know, so that's what I do now. And now I put all my research and publications on Substack.
It's excellent. Yes. I mean, I really enjoy getting them sent to my email and going through all of the documentation that you have. I mean, it's incredible the information that you're putting out there for journalists who really want to know and for the general public. And we do have that linked as well here below the interview so that everybody can get familiar with your Substack. Speaking of that, you know, you're out of retirement, so to speak, now, because it's such a compelling opportunity for you to be able to share your wisdom, your knowledge, and those things have brought you all across the world. Recently, you spoke in Stockholm, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about that. We are going to play a little bit of you speaking there, but I'd love for you to share what you feel is most important for everyone to know right now.
Yeah, so I was invited to go to Stockholm to this conference organized by, they have a doctor's group, it's called Doctor's Appeal in English, and they put up this conference and was co-sponsored, co-organized with Children's Health Defense and a few other organizations. It was a great event, actually very large for Scandinavia, for Sweden. It's a small country, but it was over 1,000 people attending, great speakers. And I was asked to speak about my findings because, you know, I collaborate now with another great researcher, Catherine Watt. She's a legal analyst, and so she helped me actually answer what the most important question I had and wasn't answered was why, given all these huge violations that I was seeing, everybody else was seeing, that would be immediately stopped in any other way. And, you know, people often, it's kind of a lazy statement to say, oh, pharma is corrupt and bought the government. It's lazy because, you know what? Every industry is corrupt. You show me an industry yes. that doesn't have corruption, really? Like construction, like entertainment, news, travel, yeah. all of them have corruption. They all buy out local politicians. It goes yeah. on continuously. Yet nobody is allowed to do what these guys are doing, which is a whole different level. It's completely criminal.
Well, and the reason why you say it's a whole different level is because instead of focusing on the pharmaceutical companies are the bad guys, which I would argue they are.
They are, yeah.
The biggest point that you've been making is that people have to wrap their minds around this was our own government mm-hmm. orchestrating this. And I think that's a hard truth for mm-hmm. many people to really swallow because, mm-hmm. That's a whole nother implication is that we've had this idea for so long that America is wonderful. It's great. We're the leaders of freedom. We do good things in the world. And what have we been shown over the last 3 years mm-hmm. is that government corruption, and it seems like it's never ending. The more time that comes, we realize how much more corrupt these government entities are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really sad. I will be the first one to say I love this country because I chose to come here. You know, I chose it over everything else in the world. I wanted to be here. And because of this, because we think that, you know, it's amazing. It's built on these constitutional principles that are unique in the world. We have, you know, the Bill of Rights. We have all this, you know, amazing structure of the government. And then you realize something like this is happening. It will be my objective in life for the rest of my life to bring this to light, to bring this to justice, to fix it. Because mm-hmm. I wanted to be the country I immigrated to.
Yes. And where were you from?
Well, I'm from Ukraine, actually.
Wow.
I grew up in Ukraine. I came to the US in the 90s and I thought it was incredible. I thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's why, and actually a lot of people have the same, you know, when they're immigrants, we all come here, we think it's such a great place. And it is, it's the best country in the world. Mm-hmm. But when you see stuff like this, this is an atrocity. This is a government orchestrated atrocity, and it must be stopped. And it's up to us to stop it.
Yeah, so true. Now, when I first started to hear about the documents that you and Catherine Watts had brought together through FOIA requests and everything, it was regarding the Department of Defense. And I'm saying this again for those who haven't heard, but the Department of Defense was aligning and colluding and orchestrating with CCP-backed Fosun Pharmaceutical Company, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Pfizer BioNTech. Am I missing anything else?
Oh, there were a lot of, there are a lot of private interests behind it. And mm-hmm. so, and it's again, it's, you know, sort of another extreme people start going to, oh, it's CCP doing this. And not quite. So yes, they're one of the big players, but I would say it's more them as a private interest in co-investing into this venture. And there are dozens and dozens of investors, including sovereign funds of various countries in both Pfizer and Moderna, mm-hmm. Including United Arab Emirates, for example, Fidelity, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, a whole bunch of private equity funds. It's called Pioneering. It's a fund in Boston that funded Moderna.
Well, the Israeli government also.
Yes, Israeli government. Mm-hmm. So it's basically the private interest behind all those governments. So again, mm-hmm. it's not the governments acting. And when I say, for example, Department of Defense or US government, again, it's not really, they're used as essentially power shell, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all this power and especially liability cover that you have as a government. So that mm-hmm. is being utilized by the private interests who took over and driving this whole machinery and using the power of the US government, the power of our military to enforce all of this all over the world.
What do you think is going to happen, Sasha? You're providing so much information. I feel like it's gotten a lot of traction in the medical freedom movement, certainly. Do you think that this is just going to continue? Do you see any way out, any way for justice to happen?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. The problem is that the crime is so huge, and typically genocides are not prosecuted because of that. Because in this particular crime, millions of people took part in it, and hundreds of thousands of professionals, including especially doctors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they were pushing it on their patients knowingly, and on children, on pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is as evil as it gets. And again, as evil as the orchestrators of this crime, I also put a lot of responsibility on those who were not orchestrators, were just going along and doing their job.
Yeah.
You know, so just for taking for money. And most, you know, who are still pushing these things are doing it for money, doing it to align themselves with power structure, career, whatever. And that's really bad. So I think the best that can happen is we take this learning. Well, first of all, we start standing up and saying no, and that's already been happening. So we already actually won on that front, because if you look at the uptake of these shots, they're at zero, practically zero. Now the next fight is moving to protecting the food supply, because they were going to be pushing it on farmers, on cattle, on poisoning the animals, so that the animals are sick and dying and then being processed, and that poisons the food supply. They're using other lines of attack, but this one we won, and we need to take it, this learning, and continue moving forward, fighting the WHO, fighting all these agricultural things, energy, because this, the next, obviously, the, you know, they're trying to propagandize this climate change hoax and stuff. So that's kind of what we need to do as a society. We need to take this learning, unify, because now we have identified the common enemy.
Yes.
And that, I hope that that will be a way to unify, bring society together, to try to fix it, to try to clean this up. And, you know, to the extent that we can find justice, I think the courts will also turn with public opinion. Right now, up to now, there's been very difficult time for people to try to bring this to the courts. Catherine explains in a lot of detail how the orchestrators of this crime made sure that the judicial system cannot get involved in this. But that can change.
Can you touch on that a little bit? Mm-hmm. Because I agree with you. I feel like not just the issue regarding the mRNA shots, but just the overreach and the complete blatant lack of upholding the Constitution and people's, you know, having their own choice on things. You know, I'm curious, what are your thoughts regarding what Catherine had to say about the judicial system?
Right. So the reason the judicial system is technically cannot get involved, technically, it's not. So I got to step back. So what I found by working with Catherine, and she explained a lot of the law to me, because I'm, you know, not a expert in law. What happened is the U.S. government responded to this COVID, we were told, health event as war. So they invoked the military law, essentially, in the situation. So it is being treated by our government and governments around the world as war. And it is war. So when they did that, when they announced the public health emergency, emergency under Stafford Act, which has never been used before, all these sort of military laws got kicked in, and now we're under that structure. Under that structure, and this was the laws to enable this were put in place over a long time. So this was pre-planned, obviously. So over a long time, even, you know, she traced it back for a very long time, but, you know, we can say even the biggest changes occurred starting in Obama administration.
Yeah.
And so when they announced that public health emergency, then all these other mechanisms clicked in, meaning that Congress kind of gave up their power to do anything about it. And the judicial system also is being told to stand down because national security. And
that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I wonder too if that's also part of are you familiar with Ezekiel Emanuel, who was put in place by Obama?
Yeah, vaguely familiar, yeah.
And what he did was he basically has orchestrated things so that there's like, it legalizes euthanasia in hospitals. Mm-hmm. And when we saw all of these people during COVID go into the hospitals and were denied the effective, safe, early treatments, instead mm-hmm. they were given a deadly protocol. Mm-hmm. And these nurses and doctors ended up really not using their critical thinking skills, throwing away all of the knowledge that they would use in the past, and had to follow this protocol. And a lot of times, flat out did things you can't say it any other way, but intentionally gave people medications that would kill them, that would suppress their breathing and make it more difficult to breathe, to put them on ventilators and eventually to kill them, all for money. Mm-hmm. And when I've tried to unpeel that and unpack, like, okay, how can this happen? Why can't people have, there's nowhere for people to go when their loved one is killed in the hospital. No mm-hmm. attorney general can help. Nothing mm-hmm. can help because the federal money is going to these hospitals through Medicaid, and it handcuffs the states from being able to take action against anything. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering, now that you say that, I wonder if this is a part of this too.
Yes.
Something that was implemented decades ago, we didn't know about it.
Yes, exactly. So this is, again, under the same umbrella of laws. The way this is structured is, so a huge amount of money gets pumped in, but money is only part of it. Money is just to keep them, sort of the hospital administrators all aligned with this. And they were giving them bonuses for implementing this protocol too, right? So it's huge. So for example, in California, to kill somebody with this protocol and to make sure it occurs over a period of time, so slowly, they get $500,000 per head, essentially, in hospital bills. So it's a gigantic amount of money, but money is not the only thing. It's also, as I said, this is a way for the private interest to use the power and the liability protection of the sovereign U.S. government. We can talk about sovereignty also, but the government has a huge amount of power and liability protection. So through this mechanism, the way the contracts for countermeasures are structured, the contracts for remdesivir, the contracts for all of these things are structured, it says that for the purposes, so it's a defense contract with the Department of Defense. They give them huge amounts of money. For the purposes of this contract, anybody who is working as a subcontractor to the contracting entity, regardless of where they work, is treated as a U.S. government employee and therefore given full liability protection that the U.S. government enjoys as long as they follow the orders.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's how it is all structured. So imagine this. It's essentially like a mafia cartel. Like, that if you mm-hmm. step out of line, you're risking your life and your family's life, blah, blah. So if any hospital administrator start saying, hey, no, we don't want to do that, they lose all the funding. The hospital goes out of business because, remember, right. everything is shut down. Only this activity is available. Right. So they're not going to do that. But also, if anybody starts bringing this up as, hey, they're killing people here, they will be immediately they will be prosecuted because they lost their liability protection.
So you mean like if a doctor or nurse or if an attorney tries to go after, you're saying that they would then be prosecuted?
Well, if the doctor, let's say they administered midazolam and then, mm-hmm. To a few patients and then realized what's going on, started speaking up, they can be threatened that, you killed a bunch of people and you're admitting to it.
Oh, my goodness.
You no longer have liability protection. We all have liability protection. So that also keeps people in line. And I'm sure people have been threatened like that as well. The police departments won't you know, so I talked to attorney Todd Callender. He had early in this thing a big campaign reaching out to local sheriffs and police departments, like thousands of them in the country. Mm-hmm. And they were sending them notices of you know, the crimes have are being committed in your mm-hmm. in your district, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, the only one sheriff in LA responded positively to them, and I believe they were fighting their own vaccination mandate. Mm-hmm. And one, he said, you know, we tried to serve him this notice, and he shut down the station and ran out the back door.
So, wow, really?
Wow. Right. Same reason. They are all threatened with this sort of national security situation. You know, it's war. We're under war. You know, military laws. You are not. So essentially they have to, by the way this is all structured, they have to maintain this structure and nothing constitutional. And but judicial, and it also says in those laws that it's not reviewable by the judicial system. And it also says, for example, you know the Brooke Jackson's case in False Claims Act, she was a whistleblower on Pfizer clinical
yes.
trials.
Yeah,
it was recently dismissed. But while yeah. this was going, and you know, Catherine did research into the False Claims Act, the way False Claims Act is written is, well, if you go through all this rigmarole for many years, you're suing the you know, under this act, eventually, if there is a court proceeding investigation uncovers corruption at the senior executive level of the U.S. government, you can go no longer. You cannot proceed anymore. You have to dismiss the case. There's nothing you can do. That's how it's written.
So, I mean, in the past, when I've looked into all of this and thought, okay, there, it's a combination of the Cures Act, the CARES Act, the PrEP Act, all mm-hmm. things that were implemented a long time ago. We need almost a committee or something that could reword that, right? Or
yes,
change it,
yes.
take it out. We need a group of brave people from Washington who can do that and hopefully get it passed. But, you know, at this point, it just seems like in order to help save people's lives, the only thing that we can do to tell them is, hey, make sure you understand before you go into the hospital that you have your patient rights. And there's a wonderful woman named Laura Bartlett who is actually providing people with a protocol if you're held hostage in the hospital. And she yes. has like the forms written out, you get it notarized and submit to the doctor, put them on notice. But mm-hmm. many people find that when they get into the hospital, they'll even say, I do not want remdesivir, do not give me that. Mm-hmm. And they give it to them anyway without telling them.
Yeah, that has happened. I think it's actually, yeah, that's a very good recommendation. So what I can tell people right now, how to, you know, deal with this, mm-hmm. first of all, stay away from the, you know, this institutional medicine. If you have to, mm-hmm. if you must go to a doctor, or you have to go to the hospital, know your rights, figure out the plan ahead of time, have a backup, have somebody advocating for you. If you're having surgery or you're going under anesthesia, again, discuss it upfront, be upfront with them, tell them, I know this happened. So, because they're human beings too. Mm-hmm. All of this happens in secrecy. And when we look the other way and pretend it's not happening, it's more likely to happen. So if you're upfront with them, discussing this with them, telling them that's how you feel, you're more likely to get a positive outcome. So you need to be aware of this and proactive about this. So this is what we can do now as citizens. And of course, say no to all these injections. Do not give them to your children. You know, so that yeah, I cannot overemphasize this enough. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, as I'm seeing it, there have been thousands and thousands of cases filed in the United States in the past 2 years. Very few achieved anything. And I am not aware of any case that went into discovery because of what I've just described. The judicial system is prevented from addressing it. Law enforcement is prevented from addressing it by the laws that are being utilized by our government. Now, the next, you know, the thing needs to happen. Yes, reform. We need to repeal all these unconstitutional, illegal laws. and change it. But that's a slow and very difficult process. So absolutely. In the meantime, this is all we can do is fight for ourselves and fight for our children.
You're exactly right. And I'd love if we could talk about, you know, just in the last week or two, we're hearing about that they are now going to put the mRNA technology into our food supply, specifically cattle and pork. But we know that they have the technology to do that with lettuce as well. Mm-hmm. I'm curious because there have been people from the Cattlemen's Association has said, oh, there is no approved livestock mRNA shot, so we don't have any of that in our cattle right now. Sasha, what do you think people should do other than trying to find locally sourced organic farms? Even with that, I'm concerned that, you know, we understand that livestock have to be, you know, they have to have regular vaccines to comply. These farms have to comply. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this going and what do you think people should do?
Well, so they need to, I think they need to support the legal cases that are fighting it right now. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm actually going to speak with Tom Renz shortly.
Oh, great. The Missouri bill.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that needs to be absolutely brought to a stop, because what's going to happen? So just briefly, there have been huge contamination of the human mRNA shots identified, lots of different ones. But the most concerning to me was the recent one. Kevin McKernan, a researcher from Boston, he's a genomics expert. Yeah. So what he found is that they're contaminated with DNA. And not only DNA, but DNA with antibiotic-resistant genes, plasmid DNAs, and with the cancer gene promoter, and which was, none of this was disclosed. The DNA is not supposed to be there at all. Mm-hmm. And that's extremely concerning. Why? Because the DNA can, this whole thing about integrating into human genome, I think it's a bit of a science fiction. It can happen, but not the huge probability. But what can really happen is that this integrates into your microbiome. You have gut bacteria living inside you, and they are extremely important. They determine your health, your longevity, your everything, your chronic diseases. It all depends on your gut microbiome. And this is the attack on the human gut microbiome, much more than on genome. Because what can happen, these plasmids, they're the way they're grown in manufacturing is in E. coli bacteria in vats. And you have E. coli bacteria living in you.
Yes.
So you get that contamination, they grow, they can replicate in your bacteria culture, your own bacteria. Yeah. So you become that vat.
So that's interesting. So it's not just that, you know, eating the meat that has the mRNA in it would cross-contaminate in the way that we're thinking. It's that it would have everything to do with the microbiome in the gut.
Yeah. And same with animals. So it will injure your microbiome, and a microbiome injury leads to all kinds of chronic diseases, including diabetes, obesity, the heart diseases, mental diseases, you know, everything depends on it. So it can injure you. Same thing it can do to the cattle. So the cattle will be injured, unhealthy, dying. They will be still processed into food. And so that needs to be prevented. And all of this contaminates the environment, because now there is so much of this, and so much of the pretty much, you know, bifidobacteria is an important part of our gut system, but it's everywhere. And I think that's what they're attacking, actually. They want it destroyed. Right. And if it's destroyed, then we have unhealthy world, and because we're all connected. Us and animals, and you know, so we have this whole attack going on us and our food supply.
I'm curious, have you seen the article just recently about spices containing toxic substances like arsenic and many others? The Epic Times just reported on it this past week. And I'm curious because a lot of the spices that they were listing as being potentially dangerous and harmful due to toxic substances being tested and found in there, they happen to be the same spices that are used medicinally to heal people. you know,
You need to read it critically. Obviously, again, source organic. There could be, you know, if it's coming, if it's some kind of a mass produced, maybe they have ingredients coming from China or somewhere abroad where, yeah, there is arsenic contamination just because, you know, they grow it somewhere by the side of the highway. There's like no, or by near some kind of a manufacturing facility which leaches into the, so it's possible. Try to buy and source organic, grow your own lettuce. You can grow yourself even in the city. You can grow it in tower gardens.
Yes, I love my tower garden.
So lettuce is not a big problem. The cow is it's a bit more problematic, but I know there are co-ops, organized co-ops. Find even around the cities, there are farmers. You can, the people that just, get money together, buy a cow and have it raised by a local producers. That's another way of making sure that you're getting the good quality. And we need to legally fight these things, and the farmers need to be aware that the association is going along with it. Why? Because the government is giving them money, and they're just doing it the same way the doctors are going along with killing patients. Well, this is even morally easier, right? So that's why. But we need to be aware. We need to stand up and make sure that this doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sasha, you're doing such a great job of letting people know about all of this, and so appreciative of your work. Again, we have your Substack linked below. I encourage everybody to check it out. Support Sasha's work financially if you're able to. And Sasha, thank you for joining the show today. I look forward to having you back on again.
Thank you, April. It was a pleasure.